Blog Talk Radio.
And hello, hello. This is Caroline Siniza Levine, co-founder of Six Figure Start and host for today's episode of the Six Figure Start Career Advice Radio Show. Here at Six Figure Start, all of our career coaching is done by former Fortune 500 recruiters. So we share an approach that's based on inside knowledge into what companies are really looking for. And my specialty in particular is career change and entrepreneurship, because sometimes fulfillment and financial reward, money and joy, mean you need to do a different career altogether or go into business for yourself. We have a lot of free resources on our site, sixfigurestart.com, including archived episodes of past radio shows. Just check out the blog, do a search for Blog Talk Radio. All of the different episodes will come up. We also blog on a number of different topics. Networking, negotiation, and personal branding are actually three topics that are curated on our free resources section. So check out sixfigurestart.com for more information. While you're there, you can subscribe to our free bi-monthly newsletter with tips and advice and upcoming events delivered right to your inbox twice a month. And we actually have an event that kicked off last week that's ongoing through November. Every other Wednesday, we are hosting webinars called Confessions of a Former Recruiter, where we're talking through different topics in the hiring process. Last week, we talked about resumes. Next week, we're talking about interviews. We're also going to talk about negotiation, LinkedIn, getting noticed, breaking through that application process, and then finally, pet peeves. So it's a very fun webinar series. It's free, and you can get more information on our site, sixfigurestart.com. So I'm really excited about this show. I'm just trying to get my control panel back up. So I'm really excited about this show. Today we have Laura Bassin, who I have known, I'm embarrassed to say, I think it must be almost 20 years now. I think Laura and I first met at Columbia University. Laura, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. I'm happy to be participating. Thanks, Caroline.
So thanks for joining us. So I'm walking down memory lane here around, we met at Columbia, and I have to say, wasn't that 20 years ago? I mean, it's got to be at least 15 years, because I've been teaching at Columbia for over 15 years now, and I think that that was around the time that we met, so it's like 15 to 20 years, right?
Yes, exactly, right. I was there at the end of the 90s and then moved on to Fordham, so we crossed paths just sort of in 99, 2000, and
oh
we were both up at Columbia, and so that was great, and I'm so glad we got to know each other then, and then reconnected again once you started Six Figure Start.
Absolutely, and so Laura, you have such an interesting expertise. So I mentioned before in the intro to Six Figure Start that all of our coaches are former recruiters. Now, Laura was not a former recruiter, but she has a very special set of skills. I feel like I'm telling people you're Liam Neeson in that way. You're the Liam Neeson of campus recruiting. So Laura's superpower is, so you've been at this with Columbia University, Fordham University, so, you know, big name graduate schools, and you've been on the career services side. So basically, you've interacted with, at this point, dozens, probably hundreds of employers who are specifically trying to hire MBAs, graduate students, and coming on campus. And so you've really honed in on, you know, what they're looking for, and then therefore what the students need to be doing to be marketable to these employers. And I want to go a step further and say that a lot of these students, a lot of these populations that you've worked with are international populations. So you have even a subspecialty, if you will, working with international students who are studying in the U.S. and who want to work in the U.S.
Right, exactly.
Did I get that
well,
right?
At Fordham, we have about 70% international, and up at Columbia, at School of International and Public Affairs, that was 40%. at that time. It's probably higher now, but I've had the opportunity to work with international students over the decade and a half, and also founded and was the faculty advisor for the Fordham International Students Association. And I did that because, in part, I knew that the students needed an advocacy group, but they also needed a place where they could share information, a lot of what we'll talk about today, because sometimes it's just very, very simple activities that students can take part in, or certain things that they can do for their resume or for their interview preparation. That's so simple. And by knowing these different tips and sharing this information, we can really help the students become more competitive candidates.
So, yeah, so let's jump in, because you had a number of interesting tips, and I think that are relevant not just, frankly, to students, not just to international students. So we'll definitely talk about that. But, you know, one of the things that you said was around research. Do your research and ask good questions. So why do you say that, and what do you mean by good questions as opposed to bad ones, I guess?
Right, exactly. Well, I'm so glad that you pointed that out, because this is really an important common denominator to everyone's job search. That when you're working with recruiters and interviewing for positions, you really need to do your research prior to that first meeting, and you also need to ask good questions. So I think one of the roads that international students tend to travel on when they're in the job search, which is a problem and is a mistake, is that one of the first questions that they like to ask recruiters, and they think it's a good question, but it's actually a don't. This is a don't. Do not ask, do you sponsor international students? So, of course, international students think, well, this is my strategy. I'll only be looking at firms who will sponsor me. But, in fact, it's I like to think of it almost like if you were to walk up to someone that maybe you were hoping to ask out on a date, but instead the first thing you asked was, will you marry me? People get a little scared off from that. So it's really like walking up to a company and immediately asking, will you marry me? And that's not what the company is there to do. They're actually there to have a meeting with you and find out if you're a competitive candidate, right? So students think, well, it's strategic. Let me ask, do you sponsor? And then what happens is the student is looked on as less than competitive, because if you've done your research and you've really dug into the website and networking and meeting with other individuals at the firm and all the other points that we'll talk about, then you're really not starting there with a question. You're asking a good question. So, yeah, let's talk about what a good question might be, right? So I think if someone's really done their research and they have an opportunity to meet with a recruiter, something they should be asking is, from that recruiter's perspective of having hired in analysts, associates, what do they see that person doing in the role in the first year that brings success for that candidate? So what you're trying to mine out of that question is, what do I need to focus on in my profile that I can then bring up now as a secondary part of the conversation, that you actually have those qualities or experience? Or you'll be able to, if you do secure an interview, you'll be able to actually focus on making sure that you bring up those qualities, knowing that's something the recruiter looks for. You can also ask questions about, what do they like about the firm? Why were they attracted to working at that firm? What keeps them there? And what other activities, social, volunteer activities, or things around corporate responsibility, sustainability, women's initiatives, anything that is extra to the firm that isn't just the typical, tell me about this one particular role. When it's you can do that research on the website. What you want is extra information that will help you articulate your interest in the firm at every other future meeting.
No, that's such a great point, because everything that you learn at the interview should be something that helps you be more competitive. Exactly what you said. I agree 100%, and it's so important not just for students. I tell experienced professionals all the time, you know, you can't trust what the job description says about the role. You have to ask them, what are they looking for? What is success for that hire? And then you have to use that information basically to plan out the rest of your interviews. Well, I want to bring something up, though, Laura, because I get a lot of pushback when I tell people to do the research and to prepare questions. It's uncomfortable for not just students, even for experienced professionals. They're uncomfortable around, you know, how much due diligence and how probing can I be in the questions, and there's a lot of that uncertainty. And you actually say, you know, one of the things that you need to do is get out of your comfort zone.
Okay,
so,
right.
You know, yeah. So why do you say that? Are you saying that in this context? Like what? Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think in terms of getting out of your comfort zone, that will certainly include networking. A lot of students, especially international students, sometimes do not feel, they are fluent in the language, but they don't feel confident about engaging in conversations or even initiating conversations in English. And part of your research for any role is to certainly network, which we can talk about at another point, but in being able to feel comfortable to initiate a networking interview with, say, a professional at a firm, you do want to really ramp up your skills in terms of your fluency and confidence in speaking English. So what recruiters have said to students at information sessions, and they've said to me separately in debriefing sessions after on-campus recruiting, is that the one thing that is holding students back is their confidence in speaking in English with others. And what the recruiter is really looking for is that confidence and the fact that the student candidate seems very comfortable with customs here in the U.S., and can then be put on a team, which is so important in today's working world. That's one of the top things that recruiters look for, is that your ability to work on a team, but also that your top skill that they look for is your communication and presentation skills. So they're looking for the ability to also have you engage with the other team members, communicate well, but also up to your managers, other associates, perhaps analysts, and also clients, and that's where the communication and presentation skills come in that are so important. So it's a very simple step that students can take in order to increase their confidence. And what we suggest, and what I tell students all the time, and I see it happen, for those who take action on this, just start and initiate conversations, small conversations, all day long, every day, when you're getting on the bus, when you're going to the movies, when you go order a coffee, when you're walking down the street and someone asks for directions, or perhaps stop someone and you should ask for directions. These small conversations, when you have them intermittently through the day, you go to the library or someone asks how to get to a classroom, don't shy away or be reserved from having those types of interactions, because the students who I encourage to do this, I see improvement in a week or two, and I'm not kidding about this, and the results are remarkable. And I see their confidence build from there, and then the more research that they do, and then they start networking, and of course the networking then builds into their research and gives them that confidence of speaking with professionals. So it's really a good starting point, and so many students may stay in their comfort zone speaking to students who speak their language, and that's okay, of course. You want to have your nice support system, and you should, because there's a lot to do when you're in school, and there's a lot of stress, and you want to make sure you have people supporting you. But this is part of the job search, especially if you want to secure work in the United States, and that's one of the pieces that will make recruiters feel that you are more comfortable and more confident, and they'll see that come through in these interactions. And they also want to know that you feel comfortable with the culture. So I'm not sure if you found this also, Caroline, when you were meeting with candidates who were looking to work here, but it's really important that they be able to engage in a conversation about something that's happening right now, currently, and not just current events in the news, but also culturally. So we suggest that they go to the museum and go to the different tourist attractions in the city and participate if there's a concert in the park, or at least know about it, so that if people are having this shared experience within a city and you're meeting with those recruiters, that's a really good topic of conversation, and it also shows the recruiter very vividly that you are engaged in the culture of the city and you do feel comfortable here, and therefore it will be easier to hire you in.
Yeah, no, and I just want to highlight, because there was so much there that you said, I just want to highlight you gave some excellent advice around, you know, working in the practice in your day-to-day, so asking for directions and talking to someone on the bus. And I love that notion of practicing in these low-stakes situations. You know, there's no risk there. This is not a job interview, and you're able to get some practice where it doesn't really matter. And then you talked about, you know, using the research, doing some targeted networking, and building from there, and then incorporating some of the cultural pieces. I think that's just so important. And I have to say, not just for international students in terms of language fluency, but there's also business fluency, you know, and this is true even if you are a native English speaker, you still need to be fluent in the language of business and in the industry or market that you say you want to work in. And so one of the things that I've seen trip up, you know, new entrants into the workplace is that they haven't yet gotten accustomed to speaking about business, speaking about current events. And so, again, they get thrown off in an interview situation where they need to discuss that. Perhaps they're given a business case, you know, and they need to maybe brainstorm or theorize on a business case, and they're just not comfortable doing that. And that's just beyond the language skills. That's just, you know, the practice of it and recognizing, you know, this is something that you have to do.
Absolutely. Yeah, you have to get out of your preparation as well. You have to really be listening to the questions. And oftentimes recruiters do want to have just a small, what we say, banter or small introductory conversation. They won't necessarily launch right into, tell me about yourself. And so you might be walking to the interview room and they might say, hey, did you see the Yankees game last night, or some kind of sports competition. So it's really important to be active and aware of what's going on around you to really show that you're a well-rounded individual, and that's what they look for.
Right. And another thing that you had mentioned in terms of key pieces of advice is to manage your expectations. So what are you seeing in terms of, you know, maybe is it over expectations for students, or is it just not matching with the employers? Like, what do you mean by manage your expectations?
Right. So I think what I find students report back from experiences where they've either gone to a career fair or they've had a first round of an interview, and perhaps they did not pass round one, or while they're at the career fair, the recruiter says to them, okay, great, nice to meet you. Why don't you now apply on the website? And the students have reported back to me that they failed. I asked them, how did it go at the career fair? Did you meet anyone? What did you learn? What roles are you interested in? Or how did it go during the interview? And their response is, I failed. And that was very interesting to me, because we, as you and I know from being coaches, that it's not a pass-fail type of activity. I mean, the job search is, as you've said oftentimes in six-figure start shows, that it's about volume. And mm-hmm. So also the expectation of a career fair for the recruiter is to meet hundreds of candidates and to be able to screen in perhaps a few that might be ideal candidates that they'll pursue once the candidate applies on the website. It's a marketing opportunity for them. They have the company there for a variety of reasons, either to just advertise the company. If it's on campus, it's certainly to keep a strong tie with the university. And they may be actually hiring in interns or full-time. Sometimes it's just to be out there and getting the name and profile of the company on campus. But the student needs to know that's what the formula is. And so managing their expectations of understanding, yes, it's a lot of work to prepare, and yes, it's a lot of work to put on a business suit and get the right pitch and wait online and wait for your 2 or 3 minutes, if you're lucky, 2 or 3 minutes with the recruiter, but that's all you should expect. And that's actually very successful. If you've been able to do that with a few of your target firms and you got up and asked good questions like we talked about, not just do you sponsor, but what is the success for a student for a candidate in this role, and learning more about the culture of the firm, then you walk away, there's lots of positives. Rather than saying, oh, well, they didn't offer me a job on the spot, what you walk away with are lots of positives, that you actually gave a good pitch, asked good questions, met the recruiter, got the contact information of the recruiter. Now you have a name that you can put on your cover letter. This is somebody that you can follow up with. And so I think that that's really the best way of looking at it and understanding what the formula is for these conferences and career fairs. And if you manage that, you're going to feel a whole lot better about what comes of it and what you feel like after you've met with these recruiters. And you are much further along in your job search and being a competitive candidate. Don't you think?
No. Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, I see this all the time with job seekers, and again, not just international students, not just students, even experienced professionals, they try to close too soon. You know, they look at their resume and they think,
right,
this resume is going to get me a job, instead of this resume is going to get me in the door to have a meeting, you know, and then
exactly,
after a meeting, it's like, this meeting didn't result in an offer. No, this meeting is going to result in another meeting. You know, we don't know how long this process is going to take. So I totally agree with you. And as a recruiter, absolutely. You know, a recruiter, you know, from their perspective, you go to a career fair, you know, many times just for branding or for research and not to close anything. And so you're right that, you know, what you're there to do is basically make a connection, you know, and you're not there to close, and that's not the metric that you should be applying. So I think that's great advice. You also talked a lot, Laura, about being specific and about being focused. And can you just, you know, maybe elaborate on the key things that a job seeker, a student job seeker, an international student should be focused on, or how they can be more specific and focused?
Okay, so I think, again, some of the information that has come back to me in debriefs with recruiters is that some students are really reluctant to commit and be specific about the role that they're interested in. So it's really important that you start to be specific. It's okay if you're still starting to explore, I'm not really sure if I want to do market research or branding, but at a certain point when you start to meet with recruiters, you do need to identify yourself based on your self-assessment as well as working with coaches, career services, and also doing the due diligence, as you described, really reading the roles and understanding what the responsibilities are and what your degree is, so that you cannot put that responsibility on the recruiter to decide for you what the role is that you should perform within the firm. And I know that students sometimes think, oh, but this is much more strategic. I'll leave myself open. I'll do whatever the recruiter suggests. I'll do whatever they want. What that actually does is it's diluting your power as a candidate. They are looking for candidates who have done this research process and that have really thought about what role they are a best match for, and then commit to it, and that you can really articulate why you're a good match for that role. And that's how the process starts to take off. As soon as you leave yourself open and you're not specific, it's just too hazy and muddy. And the recruiter, that's not their job. Their job is not to decide for you what role you should have. So it's really important that you start to commit to what it is that you want to do. And if you are still gathering information, get back to people who you trust. Keep talking with professionals who, again, are giving you feedback. And if you are hearing over and over that you should focus on market research, but you really want instead to do brand, then you need to find out what's missing that's either not on your resume already and you need to get another key internship or some type of volunteer experience to make that happen. Fill in the gap. So, again, you are being seen as someone who's focused. And the focus not only comes through your articulation of why you're a good match for the role, but it also comes through simple things like on the resume. And that was another point that I had wanted to point out for students. Sometimes they load up their resume with way too much information. I'm sure you've seen this. And they tend to list every single award they were ever given as an undergraduate. And that actually, again, dilutes their power as a candidate. What the recruiter is looking for in that top third of the resume where you list education is your degree and what your concentration or major is, and then relevant courses that actually are relevant, not every class you've taken, but those that are relevant to the role that you're looking for. And again, that's where you then have to commit. If you're interested in tax, those relevant classes should be tax classes. If you're interested in audit, those should be accounting and audit focused. So the relevant, that word is very important. The GPA is important, obviously, but also any type of award or club that you have engaged in, and have it be focused. If you list 10 clubs that you're in, there's a good chance that you'll get screened out, because the recruiter looks, I think, at a resume, 4 to 7 seconds? They've done the research on that. I don't know if you have a stat on that.
Just 10 seconds. And in fact, I wrote a blog post about that for Forbes about what recruiters are looking for in seconds. So, no, absolutely. I agree 100% that you do want to keep yourself focused. So we have a minute to wrap up. So, Laura, I just want to point out for folks who are listening to this, there's so much information. I didn't even get to all of the different points you wanted to highlight. So, of course, I'm going to bring you back on the show in a few
minutes
to talk more, definitely, because we've been talking so much, and we could go on and on. And so I just want to share, some additional resources. So if you want to get more from Laura, and if you want, to share some of this expertise, Laura Bassin is one of the coaches with Six Figure Start. And so you can go on our site, sixfigurestart.com. You can read more about Laura in the coach bios, and you can contact her using the contact form there. Just let us know that you'd like to work with Laura, that you have a question for Laura, a comment on the show, and definitely, we will get that to Laura, and we worked closely with Laura, like I said. I mean, I've known you for, over 15 years now. And just in terms of additional information, the last radio show that I did was with Katie Voles, who's another Six Figure Start coach, who coached at NYU and at Yale. And so you can hear from both of these calls where we talked about just completely different information, completely different advice. There's so much to talk about in terms of the campus recruiting, job search process, and, of course, this extra layer that Laura's been talking about regarding international students. So, obviously, there's so much there. Check out the blog. Check out the coach bios. Come by the Six Figure Start site. We have a program called Jumpstart, which is one-on-one coaching, small group coaching, and audios and videos and exercises, and that's yet another opportunity to work with me, to work with Laura, to work with Katie, and all of the coaches at Six Figure Start. So I will be coming back next week, or in a couple of weeks, I think it is, with another one of our experts, an expert on peak performance and mental toughness, Renata Calhorn. That episode is going to be posted in a couple of weeks. And so, Laura, thank you so much for joining me, and we'll have you back in a few months.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I look forward to it.
Okay, and so this is Caroline Sinisa Levine, co-founder of Six Figure Start and host for the Six Figure Start Career Advice Show. I will see you on the next show. Thanks so much.